It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
I don't know, we already knew this was coming. You know, we knew what was coming, and here it is. And we go look at the precious metals market, and we have, what was silver at? I don't know, it was been over $20 before, but now it's dropped down to about 18. Well, fortunately for my son, he cashed in a bunch of his silver, put down payment on a house he got for almost nothing, with a poo, here in, you know, Phoenix in a nice neighborhood for, $89,000, and he goes down and he cashes it in at, $18.50 or something like that. It's down to 18 now, so he made a little bit extra. So he's good, but I really wish he was able to hold on to that, because I know it's going to get stupid. And what are we looking at? The stock market. You know, well, it's a 300-point swing the last few days, going up and down, up and down, up and down. This is death throes. You know, this is the dinosaur coughing up blood. You know, if you know the dinosaur is going to die, if it's coughing up blood, what's the first thing you want to do? You want to run up and count coup on it or something? You don't go slap them and run around? Yeah, that's just stupid. If you know it's going, just stay away from the teeth and tail, man. Just go camping or something. You know, I'm good. You know, I'll be back later. You know, when the bones are picked clean by the vultures, you know, maybe we can start over. And start over with what? We're going to get a start over. We're going to get a do-over. And it's going to be from, you know, let me share this with you so you understand my thought process. We're going to get Daniel Esterlin on again, because he was asked by Castro to come visit with him and tell him all about the Bilderbergers. And everybody's going, and he asked him on another show, they were talking to him, or it was in print, I saw it, and he's going, okay, you know, I'll go talk to him too, what the heck, you know, because you have an entire Western Hemisphere that speaks mostly Spanish, I think. You know, probably you got a lot of Central South America. I think it's only Brazil that's primarily Portuguese. And then we have English in North America, and you have a little bit of French over in Quebec and so on. But I would say primarily, probably if you went by numbers, Spanish is primarily spoken in the Western Hemisphere. And Americans are the only ones that only speak one language anyway, so a lot of people speak more than one. And I would think that most of the planet, English is probably their second language. And I'm looking at what happens when you tell all of these other farms, a.k.a. countries, in the Western Hemisphere that they've been screwed, man, by the same people we've been screwed by. It's just a different way. Stephen Molyneux is a podcaster, a writer, a YouTube maker. He's a philosopher that spends a lot of time on the internet. He's getting his own crowd. And I tell you, he's really, really a breath of fresh air. And he's going to be one of the speakers at the Freedom Summit this year. Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. Go there and you'll get all the goodies. And we have a great lineup. But what he's been saying is that countries are just, they're just farms. And they may each have different types of livestock management tools, but they are all management tools. If you are a country and you have resources, somebody's going after them to the point that they will do whatever they can to change the regime. They always call it a regime when they want to change it. But they change the governments, and this has been going on for generations. Change the government to do whatever it is that they, them, those that won't leave them alone, want them to do. And if you won't do that. Well, that's what the military's for. They just come in and say, hello, guess what? You're going to do what we want you to do anyway. Well, that happens time after time after time. Well, what's the difference if you're the planetary central banker of, you get the IMF or the World Bank or whatever, and you get these guys indebted in these countries, and then, oh, you owe us money. Argentina, Chile, Venezuela, Bogota, I mean, you know, Bolivia, Colombia, Mexico, whatever. Do we really care what government you have or who votes? I care not who makes the laws. Just give me control of the money. But what happens when you have Esterling starts going around the Hispanic country-speaking countries, and they go around and they say, let me tell you what's been happening to you. Let me tell you who's been doing this to you. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you how. Let me tell you who. What kind of impact is that going to have? I don't know. I'm willing to find out. I think it'd be, you know, good Ian did. You know, so we'll go ahead and we'll see what happens with that. We'll talk to Esterlin about that, because I'm interested in what is going to be the impact when you have a just even the populace understand as much as the revolutionaries did. This is why I focus on how many minds can you free. And we talk about Freedom's Phoenix as a tool a lot. If you go to Freedom's Phoenix, I want to show you something. If you're listening and you're near a computer, you go to freedomsphoenix.com, and on the top, you'll see a horizontal navigation bar, and it'll say, like, front page, page two, archive, search, that kind of thing. One of the things up there that says translate page, you just click translate into Spanish. The entire page and everything you go from then on, all the links and everything, translates everything into Spanish. It's a Google app. And it's gotten a lot better. We've had it for years, but I tell you, you know, in the last year or so, it's gotten really, I speak enough Spanish to know that, man, that's a lot better. And I, you know, I learned Spanish, you know, take a couple of years in the high school, and then I have a restaurant, and guess what? I want they money. You want to order a pizza in Spanish? I can do that. Because I want their money. You know, I didn't see it. I don't care. You know, so this is where the free market goes. And a lot of people, they'll complain because you'll have in the Hispanic part of town or little China or little whatever, Italy or Chinatown, or you got, you know, the Russian community in New York City or what. Well, they have another language. They're building a mosque near Ground Zero. And I'm, you know, that was such a created issue, as is the immigration thing. They distract from what the real problems are. Let me tell you what the real problems are. The bank robbery that's going on in front of your face. Got chickens? Well, let's go ahead and look at 15 signs a U.S. housing market is headed for complete and total collapse. And we haven't even got to the commercial real estate thing yet. You'll hear a lot of people talking on about, I have a member of my family that works in the insurance industry. And I ask him about, well, how are the insurance companies doing? How are these annuity plans and these financial management and all this kind of stuff? And I remember, you know, a couple of years ago, he would always say, I go, yeah, we're conservative. Yeah, we only invest in commercial real estate. And I'm thinking, you know, and I tell him, I go, well, then you're screwed, man. You know, get another job or something. I know what's going to happen. It's just all going to come tumbling down. Well, if you look at, you know, the various charts, we have them available. It's 15 signs the U.S. housing market is heading for complete and total collapse up on Freedom's Phoenix. And you go look at that, and it's just a lot of different charts. You know, it's like new home sales plummeted, even more than they have in the past. Construction of new homes down. You know, people wanting to buy a new home, even in the market, way down. You know, record foreclosures are everywhere. Now, this is, and that is not even what they are capable of foreclosing on. People that just stop making their payments. They don't have the mechanism by which to do it, because I know what they're doing. They're consolidating the method by which these homes will all wind up on some single person's balance sheet, just like they did with the Resolution Trust Corporation after the savings and loan crisis happened. Because what they do is they'll take all of these home, you know, these toxic assets, you know, whatever they want to call it, how they want to do it, and they'll put them into a block of investments or a block of mortgages or a block of something you could buy. And then they made, when they did this in the 90s, they made only certain investors capable of even bidding on it. Because they'd make it very large, you'd have to have enough money, and you know, where'd they get this money? From the TARP. Why do you think they're not putting it out into the system? Because what they're doing is they're taking all of this money, they're accumulating it, putting it in big buckets, and they're in the banks, and they go, we're waiting for the deals. Well, where are the deals? The government has to manufacture them. They have to consolidate them. They have to put them in a lump. And they're going to try and, you know, fund, make them where they're not a loss. That's why Freddie and Fannie are coming back saying, hey, man, we need a gazillion more dollars to save $5 trillion more dollars to fix Fannie and Freddie. Why? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Yeah, you may hear a little bit in the background there, and they're doing a video, but we will muddle through. They don't care about me. But, yeah, we're going to start making use of a lot more of our video editing and such, because usually we're out in the field. Like last night, if you go on freedomsphoenix.com, you'll see from 4409, where is it on the site? It keeps moving down. Oh, towards the top there, you'll see, we got spirit. Yes, we do. We got spirit. How about you? And you go and you'll see Freedom's Phoenix all over the Liberty on Tour bus, and a picture of this one guy that came out where they stopped one time. He wanted to show his whole forearm. It has the big Lovolution, the Revolution tattoo, and he put it up next to Freedom's Phoenix sign on the bus. I'm like, yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about. You know, I've seen a lot of those tattoos since, it was the winter in New Hampshire of 07. You know, people had various different types of revolution tattoos and so on all over their bodies. And that really has taken off. You know, Thomas today, our sales manager, he's saying, he goes, you know, I heard that it's easier to make $1 million than it is to coin a phrase. Well, I'm a phrase gazillionaire then, because they're using it a lot. Well, you know, also on there, they had last night, what they did is, we had talked about it yesterday, about them going out to they call it a repugnant, I guess, join in unity to kick off primary election. Well, they had a big thing in Paradise Valley yesterday. Well, they went out with these 5 sheets of coroplast tall. So it's like 8 feet high, 20 feet wide. And it says, electing, I can't see it over there. Was it, electing today's politicians that are tomorrow's problems or something like that. And it has a little GOP, elephant that's really about, you know, 3 foot, 4 foot square, and a donkey on there too. And I remember one of the people on the video saying, well, why don't you criticize the Democrats? What are you, blind? It's got a big, you know, donkey on there too. You know, they're just guilty in their head already. So the point that they were making was saying, look, man, you know, all these politicians, they're, you know, no matter what you change, you know, they're going to be tomorrow's problems. It's going to be, we're going to be complaining about these, you know, in the next election cycle. I mean, what's the difference? And that's the point that they were making. Oh, they didn't like that none too much neither. So what'd they do? The security comes out there in a little Segway scooter things, and they, hey, you can't, hey, we're on the public sidewalk. Well, we're going to call the cops. Well, you know, police come out, and they go and do their little 15-minute confab and so on, and they come back out, and they're like, all right, now they really don't want you here, as if, you know, that's a concern of ours. And told the guys, said, look, you guys, as long as you stay here on the sidewalk and everything, it's all good. Well, that's what they did with their big, giant sign as everybody goes into this event. You know, think about it. You could do all kinds of activism. You can do all kinds of stuff. Have a big giant sign in some place in Paradise Valley where the average home's over $1 million, and you got a big event at one of the resorts there, and you show your stuff right there along with a bunch of other signs that we have, and you think they notice? Of course they do. what kind of impact does it have on them? It's just a us versus them thing. You know, what can we do to thwart this? What can we do to stop it? What can we do to control it? What can we do to just get them in jail? Well, that's why you have video on video with a guy videotaping the videotapers. And so we always make sure we get it up. And the Phoenix police, they were pretty cool. So, you know, that's, you know, give them some props. But it's from experience. They weren't always like that. You know, it took at least a decade of us just like, are you serious? You guys want to go to court every time? So now we'll see what happens after this election cycle in 2011. We'll have the city of Phoenix, you know, mayor and city council races. And we're going to start bringing it back home. We're going to start bringing it back in. We're going to start getting involved in more local races because that's the inspiration. That's where it always should have been anyway, and where it always has been for us. It's just that a lot of our efforts just seem to go global because, you know, people just need to be inspired. They just need to see the impact you can have. That revolution logo came from 2006 campaigns. That's why we knew it was going to be so popular. We'd already done it. You know, this is not, you know, Ron Paul, okay, cool. We already got it done, got it taken care of. And Ron and the campaign and some of the guys I knew, they came to me and said, Ernie, are you sure you want to do this revolution thing? That's just not, you know, we're going, talk to the hand. We don't have nothing to do with you guys. You know, you're gonna be glad here pretty soon. You watch. But I go, you know, we're going to use and abuse Ron Paul as much as he's going to use and abuse the revolution. You know, the evolution. It's all about a symbiotic relationship, you know, that we can use to spread a message. I'm good with that. You know, in the next hour, we have Charles Goyette coming in. Yesterday, he spent a couple of hours interviewing a lot of guys like Peter Schiff and some others. And they were doing a money bomb for Ron Paul's 75th birthday. So he's 75 now. It's a number I can remember easy now. And it was kind of a gift for him, you know, for his son, Rand Paul, that's running in Kentucky. Well, Charles is going to share with us the impact on that and what his role was in there and doing that. And they want some help. They don't ask me anymore because they know they go, this is their argument. Ernie, we can save the Republican Party. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm looking for a mallet and a wooden stake, man. I don't want to save it. You know, I'm going to save it for what? You know, this whole thing is, I mean, you didn't get enough evidence? Or you think I didn't see it? Or I don't know? I'm feeling relatively insulted, you know, so we do what we can. I get letters from them. That's one reason why we're going to have Charles come on, because Trevor Lyman, the guy that was behind the original money bombs and the blimp and raising money for that and so on, he was one of the guys that was prominent in that, sent me an email. They're wanting us to get behind, you know, all these money bombs and so on, these fundraisers and bloggers to do that, kind of a resurrection of the tens of millions of dollars that was raised for Ron Paul. Well, it's just not happening the way. I mean, they raised a couple hundred thousand dollars before the end of the weekend. They're probably, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised to get a half a million. But, you know, they really were expecting more. And why, though? And why haven't they? And there's a lot of reasons why I think it's not, if your goal is to save the Republican Party, that's not what a lot of these guys are in it for. It's for individual freedom, and they don't see that's where it's going to get saved, I can tell you that. And, you know, Dr. Paul really, I think he made a big mistake, and we talked about it, he and I, the day before he did it when he pulled out of the presidential run. And he had a lot of what I would consider political, internal, working with the machine kind of reasons, because he is a Republican congressman from Texas. And, you know, he's run for re-election then. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things to take into consideration that were of absolutely no consequence to these young people looking for someone to carry their voice all the way through the Republican National Convention. So it had a weight on it. I'm not really sure what's going to happen going into 2012, but I know there's a lot of people that would really like to have Ron Paul run again, if for no other reason to have a choice other than whatever else they're going to put up. And will they give him any kind of his just due when everything he says was going to happen the way he said and for the reasons he said? You know, so what happens? Does it lessen the credibility of Dr. Paul, or does it put a, you know, wooden stake in the heart of the media, the lamestream media, the media so last century? I have seen in just the last few years them implode. And the only reason they are around as much as they are is because they're subsidized. By who? By whom? General Electric, NBC, Disney, ABC, Fox News, News Corp with Murdoch. You know, if you have Gannett, which has the NBC affiliate television station here, Channel 12, and the Arizona Republic, and they're losing money, why would they continue to pump them up? Because there's something else that they need. They need access to your mind. Same reason why a billionaire would buy Newsweek for a dollar. Why? It's losing money. It's going to lose money for a long time. It may never make money, but it's got a cover at the newsstand. It's all about matrix injection. And I'm the antidote. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of Me, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, where we're it's always at the center of something. You got your own problems in your state, I'm sure. I guarantee they're the same. There's always somebody who won't leave you alone. All you want to be is left alone. But, you know, there's this $5 trillion thing they got going on with Fannie and Freddie. This is huge. This is, you know, Obama just became your landlord. That's what happened. Because if you got 80% of the mortgages out there, it's Fannie and Freddie, and all of a sudden the government takes them over. Well, guess who owns it? Especially if you stop paying on it and your adjustable rate, goes to a gazillion dollars. I mean, some of these are amazing. It's like you'll have a mortgage to be able to qualify to get in, and you can barely afford that, and it may be $1,500, and all of a sudden it goes to 22. $100 a month. I just, this is, it's almost like it was planned. Well, according to, one estimate, it could be take another $5 trillion to fix, Fannie and Freddie Mac. Now, this is the economic collapse is the economiccollapseblog.com story that we have on Freedom's Phoenix. And they go on to look at various different things. But I'll just read a couple of things on here that you can pretty much count on. It's hard to even put into words how much money that is. If you were alive today when Jesus was born, it'd take you could spend $1 million every single day since then, and you still wouldn't have spent $1 trillion. But this isn't a $1 trillion problem. It's a $5 trillion problem. And if the housing market gets even worse, which it will, that figure could rise substantially. Of course, the U.S. government should have never gotten into the mortgage business in the first place. Libertarians been screaming that forever. But these days, the U.S. government is intervening in virtually every industry. And don't expect the U.S. government support for the mortgage industry to stop anytime soon. In fact, U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner says that the U.S. government plans to continue to play a prominent role in backstopping mortgages in order to keep the U.S. economy stabilized. Until when? You know when. One more election cycle. But if the only thing keeping the U.S. housing industry from plunging into the abyss is unprecedented intervention by the U.S. government, what does that say about the overall health of the U.S. economy? Mortgage defaults and foreclosures continue to set new all-time records, even with all of this government intervention. In fact, major U.S. banks wrote off about $8 billion on mortgages during the first 3 months of 2010, and if this pace continues, it will even exceed 2009's staggering full-year total of $31 billion. Not only that, but construction of new homes in the U.S. and applications to build new homes in the U.S. both declined to their lowest levels in more than a year during July. And things are rapidly getting even worse for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Mortgages held by Fannie and Freddie are going delinquent at a very alarming pace, as the Christian Science Monitor recently explained. As of March 31st this year, 6.3% of mortgages held by Fannie and Freddie are either seriously delinquent or in foreclosure. Although that's down slightly from the figure 3 months earlier, it represents a big one-year rise from 3.9% in early 2009. An increase in delinquencies of over 50% in just 1 year? That is not a promising trend. If the U.S. housing market takes another big dive in the next few years, and it will, and that, and things certainly look very ominous at the moment, what in the world is that going to do to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? So what is the solution? Well, on Tuesday, the Obama administration, invited prominent banking executives, you know, what does that tell you right there anyway? To offer their thoughts on the mortgage market. You know what I think? I think you should give us money. That's what I think. So what was the consensus? It was something along the lines of this. Please, oh, please, oh, please, continue propping up the $11 trillion mortgage market. Of course it is. And so much for capitalism. You know, don't be sitting there saying, you know, this is death of capitalism. I haven't had it my entire life. It's this corporatism thing. You know, it's all of the government, you know, by, for, and of the corporations. This is, and if the bailout wasn't a big, giant wake-up call for you, I don't know what the heck is. And all this, these programs and excuses for taking your money and promises and promises and promises and promises of taking care of you later, well, they took all that money. Heck, as the Social Security was coming in, they took it. Because what was happening, I remember, what year was that? That's probably the 2000 race or 2002. Maybe it was 2002 race. Congressional races in 2002, this is what happened. They had congressmen going back to their district for little town meetings. And of course, this is a Republican thing, you know, but they're coming back, you know, we're gonna fix it. We're gonna take, and they actually had PowerPoint presentations that they put up at school auditoriums and so on. John Chadwick did his. Barry and I went. Barry Hess, he's running for governor now, he's a Libertarian. And he and I went there just to see what was what. And then we got up and they actually called on us by, you know, I'm sure mistake. And, we made this point. After they got done with all their presentation, they said, we have Social Security that is there. And they, you know, these bad guys, they spent it all as the money came in. This trust fund you're supposed to have, they took it and spent it. Well, we don't have it accumulating. It's not there. And as people in 2012, 2010, 2014, you know, about now, when they start taking their money out, it's not going to be there. There isn't like this bubble that they created, this surplus that they got there that people all that put into it while they're in their working years, then they retire, they're going to start taking it out. There's not enough people coming into this country or being born that's going to be able to sustain the glut during the baby boom that went on to 64. So I'm going, okay, then what? You know, when do you hit the Keynesian roadblock? You know, no matter how much you borrow, and borrow, print, you know, you get to a point to where you can't even afford to service the debt. The interest is so high, you have too much spending. When you are putting out more than you're taking in, even when you are spending all the Social Security money, you know, then what? You know, we knew this was coming. Heck, they even admitted it. So this is what their little town hall thing was in 2002. Republicans coming back saying, we're going to create a trust fund. And they'd actually show it. It was like a filing cabinet where they had your name in it and so on. And see, oh, this file, we're going to take this file, we're going to put it over here in this safe. You know, like a PowerPoint's going to protect me. You know, I mean, seriously, that's what they're... And our question was this. We're going, what makes you think that we would believe you wouldn't spend the money in that safe? Program over. Next. it was a question obviously everybody was going to ask. And then you had all these people that were... their media guys and their campaign people and their supporters and so on, and just to show solidarity, I guess, or numbers or support for them and clap when they're supposed to and everything and see if this was going to fly. Immediately after that tour, this town hall meetings that they went around, it just died. It totally went away because I know what happened. The same thing that we did, they were doing across the country. They're going, and why would I trust you when you put it over in this other little icon on your screen? What's the difference? So that's where we're at. When they knew that they couldn't, there was going to be less coming in. And there was no way they could get as much to even service the debt. They even pay it off. Then they took on all this Freddie Fannie stuff. What do you think all this TARP stuff is? They're just printing money. Quantitative easing. That's what that means. Printing money. They got to come up with a cool name. You know, quantitative. What does that mean? You know, quantity. Quantity of. You know, easing of the quantity. Printing money. Might as well just say printing money. So things are looking bad. And who do they call in? They call in the bankers. When even the banksters are begging for massive ongoing government intervention, you know the game has changed. Adam Smith must be rolling in his grave. But this is where we are at. We are on the verge of a horrific economic collapse, and it is only enormous intervention by the U.S. government that is still holding things together. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the Federal Housing Administration, and the Veterans Administration backed approximately 90% of all home loans made during the first half of 2010. So where would we be without the government? Of course, we could let the whole thing collapse and allow housing prices to eventually settle at a level where people could actually afford them, but what fun would that be? No, for now, the U.S. government will continue to endlessly spend billions of dollars to prop up a system that is artificially inflated and that is destined to collapse one way or another. The truth is that the American middle class is slowly being wiped out, and they just can't afford to pay $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 for their homes anymore. That's another story we have on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. It's called The End of the McMansion. Because this is, you know, I mean, a lot of people, they were, you know, yeehaw, I can get me a McMansion. Well, now they're going, the death of the McMansion, the era of huge homes is over. They've been called McMansions, starter castles, garage mahals, and Fox Chateaus, but here's the last thing you can call them. History. They're done. This is, I don't know, you're seeing it, right? I mean, you understand what's coming, right? Now, what is it I've been trying to share with you? Just surviving this thing. Know how to camp? I mean, you know, this is where we're going. Fortunately, the technology is better. We might be able to survive it a little bit better, but survive it we must, and you need to start getting ready. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You know, you ain't seen nothing yet. You know, it's going to get bad. I've gone through this for a long time. I mean, during the 90s, I give you a good personal story. This Sunday, we're going to go to the lake with some friends that have been like the best of friends since late 80s. We were going to church with them. We were in the same Bible study class with our wives. And our kids grew up together, and they were real hard workers. You know, she was a stay-at-home mom, and he worked as a big corporate guy and so on. He just in the last 6 months, he said, I'm done. I paid off my home. I have no bills. His parents had passed away, and that kind of, you know, helped clear off whatever he had left. But he was always a double mortgage payer kind of guy. I mean, you know, he didn't get a big giant McMansion, a nice comfortable home, but you know, he just wanted to pay off all the stuff. He's very conservative. So he spends a lot of his time at church and so on, raising his kids. They're now all in, you know, one, the oldest one just graduated college, and two of them are in college. And, you know, that's taking a chunk. But, you know, he's good. He goes, you know, I can survive on Circle K money if I have to, you know, working at 7-Eleven. You know, I can go ahead and just have all my bills paid, pay utilities. It's all good. And I got my investments and so on. And he did listen, you know, enough that he got out a lot of stuff when he could, and a lot of things he didn't. And but he's not as bad as some. I mean, he started buying, you know, guns and gold and silver and such. So he's better than most, and he's all paid off. Well, we're going to go out Sunday and, you know, spend some time together and so on. But, you know, he is in a very unique and rare situation. But the conversations that we had during the 90s, you know, he just saw an Ernie. My stock went up this, my investments that, my options are here, I'm fine. I go, good, then that's the time to take them out, man. I've been screaming at them, you know, and then, you know, then it gets, you know, a little later. Then it gets into, you know, it's after 9/11, so it's kind of, you know, the Patriot thing kind of kicks in, you know. And, well, you know, I don't want to bail on America kind of was the, you know, the impression that he had. Well, he was libertarian before I was, but he was far more, you know, kind of the conservative mindset in the system. So we're, you know, very, very good friends, best of friends. And our families grew up together. We understood. And so we just, you know, okay, we'll see which way it works out. And it was about a year and a half ago, he started going, okay, you win, man. You know, what do I got to do? Well, he ran into the situation everybody does. You can't get it out fast enough. And if you do, you got to pay all these penalties. And they do everything they can to where you have to be convinced that everything's going to drop a substantial percentage. I don't know, what does it have to go? You know, 10, 15, 20%? I mean, after you get done with all the taxes you got to pay, all the other stuff, I mean, you really got to have faith that the economy's taking a dump, that it's going. It's gone, 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 gone. Or why would you abandon the system, you know, on the promise or the thought or the maybe of precious metals might be the way to go or anything else, just getting out of the dollar? Why would you do that? What evidence would you have? All the talking heads are telling you one thing. You know, all the Fox News, CNBC, Bloomberg, all these guys are telling you one thing. Who are the few people that were telling you not? You know, a couple of talk show hosts, you know, a couple of economists, you know, Peter Schiff, you know, Jim Rogers. We had Jim Rogers on Charles' show every week. I'm calling him all over the world he'd be on. He's like, yep, in Shanghai. Yeah, I'm in Singapore. I'm in New York. I'm in, you know, and the end result's the same. And one thing he did do, he had his little girl. He had a child when he was much older. And she's probably about 6 or 7 now. And I remember when he first had his little girl, the first thing he did is he got a Mandarin nanny for her and taught her Chinese. Cute little blonde girl walking around speaking Chinese. Blows him away in China because he knew where the future was. He goes, look, get out of the dollar. He was the first one to tell us, it was 0405, that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were done because they stopped filing their required reports. I guess they have an SEC report they have to file, and they stopped filing them. He couldn't get them. He goes, all right, that's it. They're done. I knew they were lying anyway. I'm out. And he would say that. You know, a lot of people, years later, they go, no, he didn't say that. Yep, got it on tape, man. Got the archive chart. Here it is. I go, we've been screaming this stuff to you guys. You know, even if you heard it, would you cared? Would you listened? Would it have mattered? You know, we knew where the jobs were going. Without good jobs, the American people, this is from this article too, without good jobs, the American people are not going to be able to afford hefty mortgages. Unfortunately, millions upon millions of middle-class jobs are being offshored or outsourced every single year. And they are not coming back. They're not coming back. What would have to change? Everything? Our entire monetary policy? The elimination of the federal... Yeah, you ain't got to eliminate it. I don't even care. You know, just legalize competition. You know, allow people to pay their debts in precious metals. You know, there are some countries now that are starting to pay their workers, the municipal workers, in gold and silver. That's how they're doing it in a lot of these, in Malaysia, I think it is. You know, that was one thing where, I think it was Soros and those guys, they're all freaking out. They were making a bunch of money on the currency exchanges when Malaysia was threatening to go to gold-based. This was years ago. I think it was in the 90s they were even threatening to do that. And this was, we're going, here it comes. And then, of course, here come with the big boys and the banks, and they'll do whatever. And, you know, whoever's butt they got to kick and they got to bribe with hookers and green fees or whatever they got to do to get them to not do it. Well, it's getting to the point to where they're doing it anyway. Because what? They're going to hold on to these dollars? Why? You know, and with regulation and taxes, and the biggest tax is inflation. I mean, you think that's one thing that Dr. Paul really wanted to emphasize. He's going, inflation is a tax. It's government taking money, value, out of your wallet by just printing more money. That decreases the value. That's what inflation does. You think you're not poorer when you pay, you know, $3 a gallon gas as opposed to 99 cents a gallon gas? You know, that, duh. There simply will never be a recovery in the housing market without jobs. But in the new global economy, American workers have been put in direct competition with the cheapest labor in the world, the article goes on. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that jobs are going to be taken away from American workers and given to people who are willing to work for less than 10% as much. My son right now Both of them work for Honeywell as machinists and so on. And one of them is in, they have different cells, you know, different buildings that they do different things. And one of my sons is in a building that they're expanding the Sky Harbor Airport. They're by the airport there, and they're going to be closing that building. Well, that was just as good an excuse as any for them to move offshore, across the border at least. So it's called Chihuahua, I think is the name of the town, and it's probably, I don't know, less than 100 miles northeast of Mexico City or something. And he went down there for a couple of weeks, and what was he doing? Training the guy on the machines that he operates to replace him. So they're going, okay, you're laid off, or you can work a little longer. We'll pay you a little, you know, daily stipend for you to go down there, a little per diem for you to go down, and you get to keep your job and so on and train this guy to take your place. And what do? I don't know. I mean, he's still working. You know, he's back. They keep extending them and so on. I mean, the big thing, I go, why are they, you know, extending? I don't understand what's going on. He goes, look, they just say to make it look good to their bosses that they're going to lay off, but when they still need parts that need to be made, you know, they're keeping me because, you know, he's like 200% of his quota. You know, they always have, because he worked in a restaurant with me. That's what happened. Time to lean, time to clean. Well, you know, all the older union guys are still in their kind of the mentality. You know, you're going a little too fast there, Holmes. And he just doesn't know any different. You know, I mean, it's the day goes slow. You're sitting around. So my sons are high producers. Well, they keep extending them, you know, keeping them come back. Well, one son looks like he's going to be all right. He's moving up in, you know, higher end. But my other son, he's still doing the work on these machines and training his replacement. Is that job going to come back? Not going to come back anytime soon. They built this brand new plant with all whippy dippy, whiz bang, heavy duty, new computer run push button machines. You know, why would they? Why would they? They simply will never be a recovery without jobs. That's just the way it is. So, no, the housing market is never going to fully recover. Things got dramatically out of balance over the past couple of decades, and the housing market is going to try to restore that balance regardless of what the U.S. government does. It is called supply and demand. The U.S. government can continue to throw billions or even trillions of dollars at the problem, but in the end, the underlying economic fundamentals are simply not going to be denied. And this is what Austrian economics is about. You can turn your dials all you want, but in the end, it's always going to come out to where paper fiat currencies will reach their interest in intrinsic value. They're going to be worth paper. That's it. Is that all you got, paper? You know, or even assets that's denominated in paper, U.S. dollars. I just want you to survive. You know, it's going to be nice, you know, when it's years later, or decades later, but, you know, we'll come back around. I mean, freedom always wins in the end. It just gets really messy first. So what happened, when that happens, you come back and you go, Ernie, you know, thanks. That one extra can of whatever, that one extra double pack of peanut butter is what saw me through to the point that we could start make our way. I just barely made it because I got one chicken. I just, you know, thank you for helping me survive it. And then we hopefully ask that you'll advocate for freedom and not this government ruler when we got to make a choice later.